Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, in the United States, the Republican National Convention gets underway today as Americans still come to terms with Saturday's assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. In a rare address from the Oval Office last night, President Joe Biden called on Americans to cool the temperature around political debate. But the attack comes at a time when the country is starkly polarized, fueling concerns of even further division. Well, for the very latest, I'm joined on the line by Michael Harrigan, who is retired chief of the FBI's Firearm Training Unit. And I'm also joined by Natasha Lindstadt, Professor of Government at the University of Essex. And thank you both for joining us. Michael Harrigan, can I start with you? Because questions are mounting and they began right after this shooting, because we saw it playing out live on television, around how this alleged gunman managed to fire his barrage of shots from the rooftop with a clear vantage point of the rally stage that Donald Trump was speaking from. Now, given your experience as retired chief of the FBI's firearm training unit, how would you define the security issues that have emerged following on from what happened?
Well, Claire, I have to say that, it's pretty obvious that there was a failure there with the security and with the planning that went into the Secret Service's oversight of that event. Basic tenet of protective operations is that you prevent the opportunity of an adversary to take a position like that within rifle distance, reasonable rifle distance, you secure that area. You either have it locked up and inaccessible, or you have somebody, an officer from some agency stationed there to hold that spot. So clearly there was a failure there. Now, this, what's going to happen is there's going to be a good after-action review on this, and which we don't know now is why that area was left open. But clearly there was an oversight there of some type, and we don't know yet why.
Mm-hmm. Because we have the former Deputy Assistant Secret Service Director, Bill Pickle, telling the Wall Street Journal that there is no excuse for the Secret Service to be unable to provide sufficient resources to cover that open rooftop so close to the site where Donald Trump was. Would you say, given I know the people that you have been speaking to from your former work life, and I know you work as a consultant now, is there a sense of disbelief amongst the professionals you've discussed this with?
Yes, there is, Claire. Actually, there's quite a bit of disbelief on that, how that could have happened. Now, there's different possible explanations. Nothing justifies it, but that's where we have to get down and find out why. Mm-hmm. Was there a mistake made where the area was unintentionally left open? Did somebody not report to the post as they were supposed to, and maybe the supervisor didn't check on that to ensure that the person was in place? Or did they simply just not think about it? And that's the most disturbing thing, because the Secret Service is an excellent organization that does this protection work all the time and is very highly skilled at this. So I have a hard time believing that it was, something that was nefarious. I don't believe there was an intentional leaving of that, but there was a mistake made. And that's something that will be looked at closely, and that I don't expect to ever see this happen again.
Yeah, and there was that extraordinary interview with the eyewitness. The BBC carried this interview, but I know it was shown across networks in the United States, where the eyewitness said he could see this person crawling along the roof with the rifle in his hand. And he said to a police officer, "You've got trouble on your hands here," and pointed to the man. And he said the police officer seemed to be looking at him and didn't really know what to do about it. I mean, these are all things that will have to be examined, Michael.
Absolutely, Claire. It's going to be something that's going to be looked at very closely, because what normally happens in training for protection operations is that a core part of this is to review past assassination attempts. So I expect this particular incident to be dissected and examined from every single angle and be used as a training tool in the future and a planning tool mm-hmm. of what not to do. Now, in that instance with that officer, when the person reported it to the officer, the officers went over there to the building From what the reporting is saying is there was no way to get up there. There was no ladder or other way to climb up. So one officer climbed on the shoulders of another officer to be able to look up there. And then the suspect then pointed his rifle at the officer, which caused the officer to fall backwards and fall off the shoulder of the other officer to the ground. And then shortly thereafter, within seconds, the shooting started.
Extraordinary.
So, yeah, it was quite dramatic.
And I know you've had a chance to have a look at the trajectory of the shots fired, the images of the shooting. And, you know, we have, you know, footage from all sorts of angles that has been broadcast now on media and social media. Did it look to you like this person was an amateur? Because we know it was a sporting rifle, a hunting rifle that was used, the AR-15.
You know, looking at it with that type of rifle, and those rifles normally have a 16-inch minimum barrel is what you're looking at on up into the 20-inch area. And at that distance, which is about 130 to 140 yards or so, it's not a hard shot for the average person to make with a rifle. It's quite routine. So one doesn't need to be highly skilled to handle that rifle, but the fact that he missed the president could be luck. Could be the fact that he wasn't very well trained on the rifle. He was 20 years old, and there's no indication at this point that I've seen that he had extensive firearms training or went to the range frequently. But that's something they're going to look at. But at that distance, it doesn't really take a lot of skill, because as they say in protection work, the Secret Service and the protectee have to be good every single day, but the subject or the person trying the assassination only has to be lucky once. So that's one of the things, is just by shooting rounds in his direction, luck can be on his side or it can be on the president's side. And in this instance, it looks like it was on the president's side at that very moment.
Yeah, it was just the turn of the head that saved him, right?
Yes, absolutely, because the trajectory of that round, if he had not turned his head, appeared to be, it would have gone right through the side of his head.
Mm-hmm. And we know now that explosives were found in the suspected shooter's car, Thomas Matthew Crooks. What's your assessment of that? Do you think that there may have been a greater attack planned here?
Claire, that's a very good observation, because that could be an indicator, depending on the type of explosives and what the condition they were in. It could be could point to the shooter's premeditation and ideas that there could have been other options he would have used to plan an attack. So that's something they're going to look at very closely. Now, we have to also understand that Pennsylvania, that state, fireworks are legal there. So there's some fairly powerful fireworks too that can be bought over the counter that are made for, you know, 4th of July or New Year's. So sometimes these things can get kind of muddled together. So it'll have to be, we'll have to look at what they find at the scene and whether these were manufactured explosives. Were they commercial explosives that he may have stolen? But that does point strongly to the fact that he could have been planning an alternate method of attack.
Now, there have been some media reports that the Secret Service rejected a request from Donald Trump's campaign to supply additional security resources, Michael. I know that the Secret Service, a spokesperson, Anthony Guglielmi, has rejected that, absolutely disputed that that has happened. But there is no doubt now, I'm sure you would agree, that there will be changes for the remainder of this campaign up to November.
Yeah, absolutely, Claire. I think they've it's very obvious now that there's going to be increased attention on the protective operations for Mr. Trump. No doubt about it. Anytime an attack happens like this and such a vulnerability has been so obviously seen by everybody, is that there's nothing the organization, the Secret Service, can do except increase the intensity, the size of their protective operation. Yeah, absolutely. They'll be taking some very very pointed and deliberate changes to how they do business.
Okay,
for sure.
Well, Michael, if you can stay on the line while we speak to Natasha, who, as I said, is joining us from the University of Essex, Natasha Lindstad. You're very welcome, Natasha. A lot will hinge on Donald Trump at the Republican National Convention this week, won't it? And how he addresses this publicly.
Definitely. He said that he will unite the country at the convention, that he's rewritten his entire speech. He'll have to preach tolerance, norms of tolerance, peace, acceptance of democracy. This is uncharted waters for him. He normally likes to stoke the fires and has in the past encouraged violence against his opponents. And that's what led to the siege, of course, on the Capitol, where five people died. He's going to have to really change the tone, but I think he needs to take it a step further. The power is in his hands and the Republicans, not only to just to turn down the temperature, but to actually say that they will legitimize elections ahead of time and agree to the results, no matter that they will accept the results no matter what. I mean, that is one of the issues at stake here. Because he has delegitimized elections and created fear and doubt, and so doubt in the election results, we see that elections have become really high stakes affairs, like you see in non-democracies or hybrid regimes where elections don't matter. You have political violence that follows. So I think it will be really important for him to go a step further than that.
And we know that there are Republicans who said that it was the Democrats' rhetoric which left the door open to this happening, painting Donald Trump as a fascist and a legitimate target.
Exactly. Don Jr., Trump's son, J.D. Vance, the potential vice president nominee, suggested that Biden was partially at fault. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene claimed on X, or as we know as Twitter, that the Democratic Party is flat out evil. But that was right after it happened and emotions ran high. I think finding out information that the shooter was not part of a left-wing conspiracy, he was a registered Republican, he had no history of mental illness, there isn't evidence at least of yet that he's part of some group, and maybe due to time, that's caused the rhetoric to be tempered somewhat. And it will be really important for both sides to talk about the importance of denouncing any forms of political violence. We've seen it already with Joe Biden and the way that he's denounced the attack. We've also seen that Trump says he's just rewritten his speech, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to really see what's going to happen at this convention. This is probably going to be one of the most interesting conventions in many, many decades here, and whether or not Republicans can turn down the temperature and change the way that they've talked about Democrats in the past.
Is there a sense, do you think now, that something like this was inevitable during this presidential campaign because it has been so heated and so divisive?
Well, it's certainly more polarized than ever. And we've had assassination attempts in the U.S. There have been four assassinations and numerous assassination attempts of presidents. So the history is already there. But we have also a country with, 400 million guns in circulation, 43,000 deaths due to firearms in 2023. That, on top of having all this political polarization and a complete shattering of democratic norms, is a pretty potent recipe. Mm-hmm. So it's a recipe for disaster. And I'm surprised that more violence hasn't happened in some ways. But maybe this is a watershed moment where people take a step back and realize they have to really dial things down.
Okay, and Michael, to come back to you, what do you think the security services, given your experience with the FBI, will be expecting to happen now?
Well, I think the problem is that, when you look at this attacker and you look you look closely at this, and the biggest concern is, was he part of an organized group of some type, a group of persons working together to plan attacks? That's the most dangerous in some ways, because they bring the number of attackers up and they have more resources. But it appears to be, in this instance, a lone wolf attacker. We call it a lone wolf, acting on their own. They were radicalized somehow against, a political point of view or a person. Hard to say at this point what his motivation was, but that is the hard one to prevent. So the Secret Service has a very a very good intelligence arm to it, where they look for threats and they investigate threats and they go and talk to people that may have said problematic things to friends, family, or online to investigate whether there's a threat. So I think they'll be intensifying that part of their operations to try to preempt individuals that may be planning an attack. But the other side of it is it's a very difficult thing when they don't know a person is coming and a person shows up looking to cause injury or death to a candidate. So that is something where you'll probably see them in many instances increase the number of personnel, closer relationships with local police departments to increase the staffing that help at these events. But you'll see some of that, and it may not be obvious to the actual observer. But I think internally they'll be making some pretty good changes.
Well, I'm sure, Michael, it's not helpful for the security services when you have people across the political divide pointing the finger, you know, Republicans blaming Democrats, Democrats blaming Republicans, because that is likely to foster and breed copycat style attacks and further violence.
Well, absolutely. You know, you have individuals that are mentally disturbed anyway or have issues, and they sit on the internet and they gather this information and they get, you know, bombarded with demonization of certain political individuals, and then over time they turn that into action, potentially into action. And that's we saw the Bernie Sanders supporter who attacked the congressman in D.C. with a rifle. He was somehow radicalized to think that, you know, using violence was an appropriate thing. And same with this young man. So, that's the hard part. But, yep. We have to also remember in politics, you look back to the 1800s, 1900s. I mean, it's been just as nasty. I mean, people have been very, there's been ginning up of all types of rhetoric on, back then it was printed rhetoric was very common. So it really isn't a change. The difference is the speed at which it can be communicated and the access to the information.
Well, and as Natasha reminds us as well, it's access to weapons.
That's part of it, possibly, but that's something that that you can't really solve here in the United States on a short-term basis. That's a larger political issue that really doesn't impact, security operations here. There's no changes you can make to that on a short-term basis. So it's not really within the security realm to address that. You simply look at, what measures you can take to prevent somebody from having access to your protective.
All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there for now. But thank you both, Michael Harrigan, who is retired chief of the FBI's firearm training unit, and also Professor Natasha Lindstadt, who's from the University of Essex. Back after this quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.